day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Silvercrest Earnings Conference Call. This call is being recorded. Before we begin, let me remind you that during today's call, Silvercrest will make forward-looking statements pursuant to the Safe Harbor Provisions of Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. All statements other than statements of historical fact, including statements regarding future events and developments in Silvercrest's future performance, as well as management's current expectations, beliefs, plans, estimates, or projections related to the future are forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements are only projections based on current expectations and projections about future events. These forward-looking statements are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, and there are important factors that could cause actual results, level of activity, performance, or achievements to differ materially than statements made. Among these facts are fluctuations in quarterly and annual results, incurrence of net losses, adverse effects of management focusing on implementation of growth strategy, failure to develop and maintain the Silvercrest brand, and other factors disclosed in the company's filings with the SEC, including these factors listed under the caption entitled Risk Factors in the company's annual reports on Form 10-K for the year ended December 31st, 2013, filed with the SEC. In some cases, these statements can be identified by forward-looking words such as believe, expect, anticipate, plan, estimate, likely, may, will, could, continue, project, predict, goal, the negative or plural of these words, and other similar statements. I would now like to turn the call over to your CEO, Richard Hough. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you very much, and welcome to Silvercrest Asset Management Group's first quarter of 2014 call. Silvercrest experienced very solid growth in its assets under management for our first quarter ended March 31st, along with commensurate increased revenue. As of the end of the quarter, our assets under management had risen to $16.2 billion from $15.7 billion as of year-end 2013. Our firm's growth was due primarily or almost entirely to strong organic growth in both our core family wealth business, as well as continued progress building our institutional business. We continue to be pleased with our progress on our growth strategy due to the dedicated efforts of our partners and employees. Of note in particular was that our adjusted EPS came in at $0.19 a share, and relative to the EBITDA margin of the fourth quarter, our EBITDA increased to 29.8% for the first quarter. I now turn it over to Scott Gerard, our CFO, for financial comments, and then we'll be taking questions.
Thanks, Rick. Sorry, everybody. You'll have to bear with me. I inherited a cold, and my voice is a little bit off. With that being said, as you may have read in our earnings release for the first quarter, AUM as of March 31st, 2014, was $16.2 billion. Revenue for the quarter was $16.7 million, and reported consolidated net income for the quarter was $2.2 million. As a reminder, please keep in mind that the results of operations and cash flows for the 3 months ended March 31st, 2013, include those results of operations and cash flows of our accounting predecessor, Silvercrest LP. Commencing with the third quarter of last year, we began reporting earnings attributable to Silvercrest Asset Management Group, Inc., which represents our Class A shareholders. Also commencing with the third quarter last year, we began reflecting partner incentive payment accruals as compensation expense. Historically, these incentive payments were recorded as distributions when paid. Looking at the first quarter compared to last year, revenue for the first quarter was $16.7 million, representing approximately a 22% increase over revenue of $13.7 million for the same period last year. This increase was driven primarily by growth in our management and advisory fees as a result of increased AUM. Expenses for the quarter were $12.9 million, representing approximately a 63% increase over expenses of $7.9 million for the same period last year. This increase is primarily attributable to increase in compensation benefits expense of $4.5 million, in addition to an increase in general and administrative expenses of $504,000. The increase in comp and benefits expense, again, was primarily attributable to increases in accrued comp related to the commencement of expensing partner incentive payments. General and administrative expenses increased primarily as a result of increased occupancy expense due to a reduction in subtenant rental income and also an increase to the provision for doubtful accounts as a result of having higher revenue levels. Reported consolidated net income was $2.2 million for the quarter, as compared to $5.5 million in the same period last year. Reported net income for the first quarter last year, again, does not include the effect of partner incentive payments. Reported net income attributable to Silvercrest or to Class A shareholders for the first quarter of this year was a little bit south of $1 million, or 13 cents per basic and diluted Class A share. Adjusted EBITDA, which we define as EBITDA without giving effect to equity-based comp expense and, you know, non-recurring, non-core items, but including the effect of partner incentive payments, was approximately $5 million, or 29.8% of revenue for the first quarter of this year, compared to $4.1 million, or 30.2% of revenue for the same period last year. Adjusted net income, which we define as net income without giving effect to, again, non-recurring, non-core items, but inclusive of partner incentive payments and assuming an income tax expense with a corporate rate of 40%, was $2.3 million for the quarter, or 19 cents per adjusted basic and diluted share. Adjusted earnings per share is equal to adjusted net income divided by the actual Class A and Class B shares outstanding as of the end of the reporting period for basic adjusted earnings per share. And to the extent dilutive, we add unvested deferred equity units and performance units to the total shares outstanding to compute diluted adjusting earnings per share. Looking at our statement of financial condition, total assets were $87 million as of March 31, 2014, compared to $100.7 million as of December 31, 2013. Cash and cash equivalents were $19 million at March 31st, compared to $27.1 million at December 31st of the prior year. We also had notes payable of $8.2 million at March 31st and $8.3 million at December 31st of 13. Also, as of both March 31st, 14 and December 31st, 13, the balance on our revolving credit facility with City National Bank was $3 million. Total stockholders' equity was $41.3 million at March 31st of 14. That concludes my remarks. I'll now just briefly turn it over to Rick to conclude.
Thanks, Scott. I am prepared to take questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. The first question is from Michael Kim of Sandler O'Neill. Your line is open.
Good morning, Michael.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Good. First, as always, Rick, can you just sort of give us some of the underlying flow trends for the quarter in terms of high net worth new relationships and maybe institutional activity?
Sure. The total net inflows to the business were almost $610 million, $609 million, and we had outflows of $133 million for a net of $476 million. On the inflow side, that was, for the first quarter, one of the best quarters in the history of Silvercrest. You would have to go back years to find a quarter this strong. In fact, it's nearly as strong as some years. So we're very pleased with that result. In terms of how it broke out, approximately $232 million were new client accounts as they were opened. Only $14 million were closed accounts, and we had additional positive net cash flow in and out of both existing accounts and then later funding potentially of those new ones of close to $258 million, which is very, very strong, as that net number in this business can frequently be negative. In fact, it was typically negative through 2012 and 13. On a quarterly basis, with the exception of the fourth quarter of last year, which was a good number. So on that ground, we were extraordinarily happy. With regards to the core wealth management business and the institutional business, about $180 million of that was due to the institutional business, which is quite good. The remainder were flows related to the high net worth core business. So it was stronger in the first quarter. Institutional was a little stronger in the fourth. That's, I guess, one of the nice things about our growth strategy. It can come from either place, and they each support each other's story. We had a very large inflow from one of our more significant clients of $150 million. That also helped during the quarter on the high net worth side.
Got it. Okay, and then it just seems like, as you just mentioned, momentum continues to build on sort of the core high net worth side of the business. But in terms of generating new business in the channel, are there ways to maybe even further accelerate growth beyond continuing to put up strong performance and sort of tapping existing clients for referrals? And related to that, maybe if you could give us an update on some of your marketing and advertising initiatives.
Sure. So let me back up with the premise of your question, which is building momentum on the high net worth side. Yes, we've seen increased flows over the past few quarters, and they've been very favorable. But I've been very careful to point out that it's an extraordinarily lumpy business, especially with the size of the clients we have. And if you look through our history, you see that it is. I would have a hard time ascribing the word momentum because we had a couple of quarters that were very strong with regards to the high net worth side. I think we're doing our best to market. We're always tapping referrals. Our clients are happy. Performance is only part of the story because of the high level of service that our partners provide our clients, and it's one of the reasons that it's an enviable business to obtain. With regards to growing that side, it has always been the case that it is going to be referral-based, and we make a point of emphasizing the need to talk to clients about referrals if they are happy. And when they're happy in times like this is the time to do it. We have done some advertising in places like Garden and Gun. We had a Wall Street Journal run. We'll be doing some in Barron's and as well as on the Internet. All of those initiatives really support the referral process. I would say they do not lead to the phone ringing. If you have $50 million, you don't call because you saw an advertisement. You call because your friend mentioned the firm and it rings a bell because they happen to see an advertisement in the same place that our clients would read them or see them. That will be picking up a bit. In addition, we have seen a dramatic increase in the publicity of the firm in general from going public, as well as from our commentary pieces. If you search Silvercrest Asset Management, our appearance in various news programs and newspaper articles has increased quite a bit. We're also about to launch a rebranding of our website, which we're excited about, to be a much more welcoming home for people once they've been referred to by our clients. The next piece of that strategic growth initiative would be additional lift-outs and or hires, much like the Virginia team that we hired, in which we are very excited about. We see building momentum there, and we're excited about the opportunities we see in some other cities.
Okay, and then just a final one for Scott. Any updates on how you're thinking about equity compensation going forward? Just curious how we should be thinking about the trajectory for the comp line, particularly with, I think, the existing grants starting to roll off
right
later this year.
Yeah, so in the first quarter of this year, we did have the first tranche of our grants, which were granted back in 2010, those did fully vest. So the remaining grants that will continue to vest are our 2011 grants and our 12 grants. The 11 ones will fully vest next February, and the 2012 grants will fully vest of February 2016. But the largest tranche were the 2010 grants, and those are fully expensed at this point.
Okay. And any thoughts on kind of the outlook for additional grants going forward?
We do have our equity incentive plan that was approved upon going public. There's no specific plan as to we're going to grant X amount of securities this year or next year. We're cognizant of the fact that there is a finite number of shares that we certainly want to reward individuals where it's warranted. We'll certainly be deliberate about that to look out for the best interest not only of our employees and partners, but the firm and balancing the amount of equity that we grant. So there's no specific plan at this point in time.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks for taking my questions.
Sure, no problem.
Thank you. The next question is from Steven Schwartz of Raymond James. Your line is open.
Guys, how are you?
Good morning, Steven.
Good morning. Rick, just to follow up, I'm not sure I understood here. The $180 million of institutional flows that you cited, was that of the 232 or was that of the 476?
That would be part of, well, the 476 is net.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's embedded in that. With regards to the 180, a lot of it's in the 232. Some of it's in additional net flows. So really, it's 180 of 609 total inflows.
180 of 609 total inflows. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay, great. And then on to some other things. The one, and this would be very, very picky, I think, but the one probably negative of the quarter, and kind of it's a trend I've noticed going on, is family office revenue. That's been declining for a while. Can you talk to that and maybe why that is and what's going on there?
There was a relationship that had significant family office services that I believe changed the way it was running its alternative assets. I can't get too specific there, and that started rolling off our revenue, I think, even as we were going public, as I recall. There's no particular – that was a very large relationship. We have other assets that we do for that family. There's no particular trend there. I do think that we need to work hard to continue penetration of those services with our existing client base as well as marketing it outside. It's very important to our largest clients, and we're satisfied we're serving them well there, if not extraordinarily well. But I'd like to see more of our clients take advantage of those services. They're really value added and can complete the picture for their financial situation.
Okay. And then if you could maybe talk about any developments out in Los Angeles, if that is growing as you'd like, and if there is an outlook for any new offices in the near term.
With regards to new offices, first, they are very likely to come about as the result of acquisitions. So I'll just spend a moment on that because it's highly likely you'll ask about it since you have every other call appropriate. The market for M&A has substantially been picking up generally, and I see it picking up in this business in particular. As I mentioned in our last quarterly conference call, the number of conversations and opportunities has increased substantially, and that's a good sign, and we are engaged in talking to any number of companies, as we have been. So I remain optimistic that that's going to be a way for us to grow offices. I think that's the ideal way to grow offices. Aside from the fact that you have an instant, recognizable footprint in a city, the key to growth in our business, as I've emphasized, is referrals. And the more that we can grow our client base with networks that are different from and apart from our clients, the more referral opportunities there are, the more overlap there is, the less opportunities. So to be able to do an acquisition or a lift out where, you know, you get any number of 200 to 400 new clients to add new services and start tapping for referrals is going to mean a lot to the future growth of the business. So it's going to be via acquisition. And there are opportunities in other cities or enhancements here in New York that we are looking at. The same goes for hiring as well. There are a couple of opportunities, and we'll just have to find the right cultural fit, which is going to be paramount for a firm like ours. In terms of Los Angeles, it's still a very new effort. We are getting very good opportunities there. And at a very modest cost. I was just out in Los Angeles and had extraordinarily productive meetings.
Okay. And then one more, if I may, and you kind of touched on it in hiring. Maybe some big thoughts on what's gone on with GenSpring. And kind of.
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on GenSpring if you don't mind. I mean, I think I'll just say that. When you build a firm and grow it, the cultural atmosphere and the partners that you attract is going to be paramount to your success. And assessing that is incumbent on me and my fellow partners, and we're going to do that. As for the specifics in GenSpring and what may be going on there, I have no comment.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And the next question is from John Dunn of Fidoti. Your line is open.
Good morning, John.
Morning, guys. Just following up on the family office revenue, can you just give us a flavor of how you go about selling those services?
Sure. So first of all, as a firm that's trying to deal with the holistic wealth of a family, and most if not all of that wealth, we really try to stay away from placing product and falling into the trap of doing a lot of what our larger Wall Street competitors do, which is to place them in product. We really seek to provide a comprehensive solution that provides ease of mind and ease of life. So to that end, we're not selling family office services. We are presenting them to the clients as part of a complete solution. And primarily what we are doing is making sure that the talented people on that team are part of the process up front in providing solutions to the largest prospects that we have. Very often the head of that team is in the initial presentations to prospective clients and in follow-up work so that they can see from the get-go the kind of services that we can provide that only enhance the very good portfolio management that we have. That's how we primarily go about it. As an asset management firm, and primarily an asset management firm, we have not sought to date to lead with family office services without the asset management component. You know, that's something we talk about from time to time and whether we should be marking that initiative entirely on its own. But to date, we've had a policy of only accepting family office clients who have assets under management with us.
Gotcha. And then you talk, as you say, flows can be lumpy. Can you just talk about, is there any high-level seasonality to that type of to flows in the ultra-high net worth space?
I have looked at our flows now for 12 years on a quarterly basis, and it is very hard to come up with a discernible pattern. The most surprising thing about that stands out to me is how often the third quarter is a productive quarter for us because that encompasses June, July, and August, and our wealthy clients, you know, virtually disappear during the month of August. And it might be, I thought about it, it might be that they're spending time with each other and their family and they have time to think about personal affairs and not business, so decisions get made. But that is one trend. We've often seen a good Q3 for whatever reason. To generalize, we typically see some negative net flows, and they can be significant in the second quarter because of taxes. the good news about taxes is it means someone's making money, and very often you see accelerated flows later as our clients produce income. You just have to realize that some of that money is going to go out the door for the tax man as it hits for any of us. But I'd be real careful about any seasonality. There's not a pattern.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Sure.
Thank you. And the next question is from Steven Schwartz of Raymond James. Your line is open.
I just want to follow up, guys. The money that went to institutional, what product? Still small cap?
Yes, still small cap.
Okay, great. That's what I had. Thanks.
Thank you. And once again, if you have a question, please press star then one.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. And I appreciate everyone calling in. And we look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect. Good day.